and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are not in Kansas anymore. Anyways, we are your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. Today, we are going to be continuing our Flock Talk series, which, if for those of you that don't know, is little tiny shorter episodes where we tackle bite-sized topics. Usually, we're sipping on a cocktail, which means the birthday girl, Angie, over here has got a special birthday cocktail. What are you drinking?
actual, real champagne.
Ooh, yep. Fancy.
Yep, I already had a Bloody Mary. And so now we've moved on to champagne.
Well, you said we're not in Kansas anymore, and I find it highly ironic that you are missing a fence.
Oh my God. Okay. I feel like we should talk about why you're not in Kansas anymore, because yours is very dramatic, and then we can talk about why I'm not in Kansas anymore.
I don't know. I mean, we are doing a bite-size recording, so we probably don't have enough time. But no, as you guys know, I'm in Houston, and we were hit really bad by tornadoes last week. And we were without power for, I guess it was about 5 days for us, and my mother-in-law was 7 days. And for any of you who are wondering, it is close to 100 degrees outside, which means it feels like it's more than 100 degrees outside. Ugh. So we don't have power. It's kind of inconvenient among the other things that you use power for. But yeah, we had trees down all over the place, trees on our roof and all the good stuff. But anyway, so that's why we say that we're not in Kansas anymore. But apparently Angie was having some FOMO. So
yeah, I really was. And so up here in Seattle, the weather is quite mild, but someone drove a car through our fence. So we are also dealing with our
to repair your fence.
Fair share of destruction. So it was really freaky, actually. So we've been like trying to think about what kind of blockade we could put up on the outside.
Yeah, because I mean, sure, somebody was back there or something, that would have been terrible.
Someone would have died. I mean, this bitch took out like a whole big ass maple tree.
Oh my God. So did she like hit and run?
No, she stayed. It's fine.
Wow. It's fine. Well, happy birthday.
Right? Nothing like raining in your mid-30s, like a little bit of house destruction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good that nobody was hurt. Yes, I would agree with putting something up there for the next crazy person.
Anyway, eDiscovery.
So today we are talking about the Internet of Things, or the IoT, as you might see it abbreviated.
Jargon, drink.
But what the Internet of Things refers to is a network of physical devices that are connected to the internet and or other devices or networks that enable the collection and sharing of data about their usage, environment, status, location, and much, much more. Your Internet of Things is referring to devices that have sensors and actuators and other technologies that can range from everyday consumer gadgets like smart home appliances and wearable fitness trackers to industrial machinery and infrastructure sensors.
Ooh, love it. Okay, so we've got your wearables. So that's your smartwatch, your Apple Watch, your Fitbit, Aura Ring, your activity monitors.
We also have your smart homes, right? And this is one I have a story about, actually. When we're talking about smart homes, you know we have smart locks, lights, we can control a thermostat, refrigerators, alarms, we have Google Home, Alexa, etc. So we have Google Home at our house. The most embarrassing thing ever happened to our family, because we had some people visiting us and they may have outstayed their welcome. My son, at the age of probably 5 or 6, comes into the middle of the living room where we're all talking and says, "Okay, Google, how do you make people leave your house without hurting their feelings?" And then Google starts like listing off 5 ways that you can have people leave your house and won't stop. And we're all like, "Stop, Google, stop." And the people are looking at us like, "That was rude." But like, yeah, that's pretty fun.
Guess we'll leave now. Bye. Oh my God.
Yeah, love it. But Internet of Things goes way beyond just wearables and smart home.
We've also got transportation stuff. So like traffic management, you know, those cameras that take photos of you when you speed through red lights. So there's that kind of thing. There's vehicle tracking. If you've got a newer car, you know, there's probably some sort of chip in there that is tracking your vehicle's location and status and all that stuff. Parking sensors, everything like that.
And medical devices, which is close to my heart because I have a CPAP machine that will tell me how great I slept and I feel like I personally did something great if I had a great night's sleep. My doctor hears all about it. But we've got blood pressure monitors and pacemakers that are communicating with patients and their doctors, and heart rate monitors, et cetera.
You've also got like smart city infrastructure. So like water and waste and electricity management, those things can all be sensored. And that includes the things that are like on your home, like your breaker box, your electricity monitor, your water monitor, all that stuff can all be smart.
Yeah. And so can your cars, and so can your video games. And it's not just us as personal residential people that are using smart technology. It's also in industries.
Right. Like agriculture, manufacturing, hospitality, tourism. Like if you, every time you tap your key card on your hotel room, you know, that's a smart lock. There's manufacturing equipment that waters crops, and that can all be smart equipment as well. So those are sort of the big like ones that you might see, but there are also some very fun / silly ones. So like a smart wine opener.
Yeah. Angie found some fun ones when we were when we were preparing to speak to you guys about the Internet of Things, like a garment steamer, toothbrush. Mm-hmm. You can feed your pets. You have smart pet feeders.
Okay.
You
love a smart pet feeder. Actually, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Do you have one of these?
Yes, we do, for the cats.
Do you watch them on your phone and stuff when they're eating?
Sometimes. But because one of them is so food aggressive and the other one is such a beta that we want to make sure they both eat. Just, you can talk to them. So you can be like, "Catty, fuck off." Like,
oh, yeah. That is so funny. I do not have that, but maybe I need that.
Awesome. They're also like smart plant pots that sing to your plants to encourage growth.
Which we probably need, because you know we're the succulent killers. Smart toilet paper that alerts you when you're running low on toilet paper.
Which, that one, when I saw that, I was like, are you kidding me? Can't you just look at your toilet paper and see that you're running low? What?
This is for people that live with people like I live with, who leave the damn thing on there empty, just sitting there waiting for you to come back around and be like, oh, well, now that I'm in the middle of needing toilet paper, I look up and see there's none here.
Diabolical. Anyway. Diabolical.
So rude. That's... I like the smart egg carton that you found that sings happy birthday to your eggs on their expiration.
I love that one. That like, is that's so amazing. Funny. There's some good ones out there. And we kind of joke, but they're all, this can all be super relevant to the world of e-discovery when these IoT devices are involved in litigation or legal proceedings. All of these things, pet feeders, your smart hairbrush, whatever the hell, they all store a ton of data that could potentially be relevant to either a lawsuit or a criminal prosecution, and that may be subject to discovery requests because of that. Data that you might find in these devices would be like sensor readings. Think like your wearables and your Fitbits that are going to have sensor readings for your biometrics. There's going to be logs. Think about like a smart home system will log every time you open the door. Event histories, location information, things like that.
Well, I found it interesting that experts predict there will be 207 billion IoT devices by the end of 2024. That's like an average of 25 and a half IoT devices per person.
That I was about to ask.
Super amazing to me.
I was like, how many does that mean like for per person kind of a thing? Well, and the crazy thing about that too is it's like, I doubt that people in some undeveloped countries have a ton of IoT devices. So really, I wonder if this is more like 30 IoT devices per person. I'm like looking down right now and I'm like, yeah, I've got my headphones, I've got my Aura ring, my Apple Watch, my phone.
I mean, it's
all this stuff.
I need
smart.
To know about the smart wine opener. Does it like trigger every time that your heart rate goes up and it sees that you need to chill out? Like, is that how that
it's
works?
Like, yeah, all this stuff is super interesting. So in prepping for this episode, I found some really fun use cases. One of my favorite ones is actually IoT devices in murder. There is a very famous case called the Fitbit murder case. If you Google it, you'll see like an article from People Magazine and CT Insight. Basically, what happens is this.
Their Fitbit killed them. That's why I don't have one. No, I'm just kidding.
A guy named Richard DeBott, and I'm just going to call him DeBott from here on out. DeBott calls the police, and it's something like 10 o'clock in the morning. And he calls them, and he's like, hey, listen, a little while ago, I got home from the gym, and I was home with my wife. Some guy broke into my house. Like, I heard him go downstairs and shoot my wife. He zip-tied me to a chair and knocked me out. And, like, I've just come to, and all this stuff has happened. Police are like, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. They start investigating. And then things start getting a little bit fishy, right? So, like, they try to find the gunman. They bring canine units. The dogs don't smell anybody else in the house. Dabot pretty quickly starts calling about his wife's life insurance policy. She is dead, by the way. She was shot in the head. Police kind of start to doubt his story. And while they're investigating this alleged murder, they grab his wife's Fitbit data. And what they realize is that in the time he said that she's already dead at this point, they take a look at his wife's Fitbit data and they're like, nah, dog, she was walking around the house. During that time, her biometrics were still going on her Fitbit and she was moving around. The Fitbit data helped prove that he was lying about the timeline because he had, in fact, killed his wife, partially for the insurance policy, and he also had a secret pregnant girlfriend. So,
this is a story for another day.
Right? And so that was another good one. But another one I found was arson. We're sticking to the high crimes, no misdemeanors. There's a guy named Ross Compton, and in 2016, a fire broke out at his house. If you Google this, you'll find an article from Fortune magazine and CNN. So September 2016, fire breaks out at his house. He calls police and is like, hey, I was dead asleep. I woke up and my house was on fire. So I threw a bunch of stuff in a suitcase, threw it out the window and jumped out after it. Police got a warrant for his pacemaker data. And through that, they determined that the time where he said he was asleep, i.e. when the fire broke out in his house, he was actually moving around. And so they were like, bro, you weren't asleep. And they ended up charging him with felony arson and insurance fraud, for which he was convicted.
Ooh.
But there's a bunch of fun things like this. Like for like consumer protection cases, there's a couple examples of people using smart thermostat data in utility billing disputes. There have been cases where cities have like overcharged people for their electric usage. And people are like, no, here's data from our electric box on the outside of our house. And it shows that we have not actually used this much electricity. Ergo, you've overcharged us and we're not going to pay it. Mm. So there's all kinds of things like that. Also, vehicle telemetrics in car crash cases can tell you like how fast the car was going, when brakes were applied, all that kind of cool stuff. I feel like I could go on forever, but that feels like a good representation of the things that you can do with this data.
Yeah. And when we're considering e-discovery and the Internet of Things, there's some unique challenges that come into play here. First is, hey, when we have a lawsuit or we have a crime or whatever, we have an investigation going on, the first thing we want to make sure that we understand is what data is available and how is it stored? How do we get it? In what format is it in? It can be really tricky to get data that's on personal devices like phones or Fitbits. It's not just so easy to go grab that information due to privacy laws and how do we subpoena that and how do we get a judge to order that person turns that over? And then it can also be tricky because perhaps whatever the device is, like our wine opener, was Brie drunk that night? maybe there's limited storage on that device. And so we can't capture the dates in question. It also brings into play chain of custody and thinking about how we protect these devices, just like we've talked in other episodes prior to this about collecting in a defensible manner. We also have to make sure that we are capturing the information on these Internet of Things devices, whatever we want to call them, in a defensible manner. For example, we want to take photos of this Fitbit before we do anything to it so that we can have evidence that it was in good shape, we hadn't busted it, it wasn't malfunctioning or what have you. And we want to have that for our records. We want to make sure that our chain of custody log or whatever forms that we're using is recording enough information about that device that we can know specifically, this is the Fitbit, the model number, the date that we got it, who captured it, where all the information that we know about its whereabouts. We want to record all of that because it could potentially come into play about what data is or is not there. And then we've got another question that we might want to ask ourselves. Hey, I'm in a company and I need to get into the dashboard of one of our company vehicles because I need information from that application. Does my IT department have the ability to do that? And can they do that in a defensible way that I can put them on the stand in the middle of litigation and testify to that? This is when our forensic experts come into play. We also have data that goes beyond what's stored on that actual device, but the information that we're after actually is stored in the cloud. Well, then how do we access that? How do we get those credentials to get into those accounts, that may require a subpoena or order or cooperation from whoever created the accounts or has the credentials. It also brings into play other e-discovery tools that we have to pull that information down in a defensible way. And then what about the different applications, like the apps that we load on our phone to manage all of these various things? The pet food one is a good one, where you've got a pet feeder, you have an app on your phone that allows you to see the video that's being taken from the pet feeder. That app itself is owned by a company. Do we have to subpoena that company? Is there any data stored by that company that we might need to bring into play here? Then we want to think about data output. Just because we can get the information from the app or from the cloud or from the device, what does it look like when we get it? Is it something that makes any sense, or is it a bunch of gobbledygook that we need somebody to help us like decode so that we can search it and run keywords through it, or figure out date ranges and all that kind of stuff?
I love gobbledygook. That is such a good word.
And then there might be reporting, like the logs that Angie was referring to earlier. What do those reports look like? Maybe they're access reports, like every time that Bree opened the front door, it recorded a timestamp on this report, but we're able to ingest into an e-discovery tool. So anyway, those are some things to consider when we're thinking about, hey, what's involved and how do we get at it? Once you figure out what you're going to get and from where and who's going to do that, one thing to keep in mind is the lack of standardization due to the large variety of programs that you are bringing data in from. It's kind of what we've talked about in our EDRM series. We want to make sure when we're processing all that data that we're doing so in a way that our legal teams are able to search metadata, for example, date ranges, or run keywords through that data. So they're able to plug it into the rest of their investigation to figure out how these different devices kind of played a role and what actually happened during the event in question.
So when I'm trying to collect from, let's call them non-standard or non-traditional ESI sources, so like IoT sources in particular, I will often go to just like a system administrator, you know, for my org, and just be like, hey, this is my end goal here. Like, what do you think about that? What's your reaction to it? Because I might have an idea of how I can go and get something, but I am, at the end of the day, not the subject matter expert on that particular device. So I'll often just like ask people their thoughts on how to do it. And by crowdsourcing, you'd be surprised how quickly you can get to a really efficient solution.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the smartest thing you could ever do, really, is, hey, I need to figure out if this or that happened, and this is what I'm trying to get at. When you ask an expert, whether that's the admin at your in-house, or whether that's a private investigator, maybe that's a forensics expert, they're going to help you think outside the box to think about all these smart devices and the Internet of Things in a way that maybe you weren't considering because that's not your initial focus, right? They're going to say, what about the dashboard camera? Well, what about this, the key fob? Well, what about the, did you know that there's a report on the key fob? I didn't know that. Well, maybe I want that. So anyway, I think that's really smart, Angie, and good advice. The other thing that I will say, and just kind of moving forward and doing one of these kinds of investigations, you'll want to consider who's going to be reviewing this. Who's your team? Who does it comprise of? And make sure that everybody, I feel like we're reiterating some of what we've talked about in our review podcast, actually, but make sure everybody's on the same page. And you'll want like a timeline and a way of communicating with one another, because the thing that makes the Internet of Things a little bit different than normal e-discovery searching is that this is where you're going to figure out the whole story. This is where you're going to figure out the motive. This is where you're going to figure out all those things that maybe you can't hit with a keyword, but you can figure out what someone's actions are. It's super important that there's a lot of great communication going on there. It's really important that at the end of the day that you are protecting everything, because data on these smart devices can be very transitory. You need to make sure before you dive in that you understand what that tool is, what it's going to happen when you open it up. Get a forensics expert is what I would say. The other thing that you want to make sure is that you bag and tag everything so that it's preserved in a way that you can find it again, you know nobody's touching it, and that you can ensure that all of your preservation and legal hold requirements are being met.
Yes, Absolutely. Plus one to just all of that. There's very limited case law about IoT, but a couple trends I've seen relate to proportionality and relevance. We've alluded to these devices are not your plug and chug ESI sources. They're sort of novel. You're going to need to go and talk to experts. That can raise proportionality considerations because by the nature of the beast, you have to do a lot more legwork to get the data out of these devices. It's not just like plugging into your email and pulling that data out. Parties will sometimes object as this being like just too burdensome to get this data. And so that is something to flag. And I think we're going to see, you know, as the courts get more and more comfortable with IoT and as this data continues to arise in more and more cases, I think we're going to see those proportionality considerations sort of diminish over time. And that's what we've seen with all our novel ESI sources, right? Like at first people were like, oh my God, I cannot collect email. This is ridiculous. And eventually the court said, no, you're going to have to figure that out. And then we saw the same thing happen with like Slack and Teams and all these ephemeral messaging services. The courts at first were like, yeah, yeah, this is scary. And then they started whistling a different tune as time went on. So that's proportionality. And then relevance is the other thing that I've noticed popping up in some of these cases where people will say, will object to producing this data and say, listen, this is just a fishing expedition, right? You're just looking for something that might be relevant. You're not actually targeting any specific data. And so I think parties are going to have to make more robust arguments around relevancy, especially considering the objections that we're seeing as far as the burden of producing this data. Also, you're a little bit on your own right now. There's just such limited case law. So unless you're in a jurisdiction where there's something on point, and I think there are fewer than 10 published cases out there dealing specifically with IoT right now, you're going to find yourself making some pretty novel arguments to the court if you get pushback.
We're not always going to collect every single piece of available data for every single matter. But what you don't want to do is get caught with your pants down.
Nope.
Hi, Mom. I know you love when I say that, but you don't want to get caught where the other party is requesting data from one of these devices that you didn't even consider. You would like to be able to consider them all in the get-go. And if it is out of scope and the means in which it would take for you to get that data does not make sense for this matter, you want to have already mapped that out before you're asked for it.
And so one of the other things, like just kind of a practice pointer here, is it might be, depending on your case, and this is going to be a case-specific determination, you might want to send a preservation letter to somebody who you might be litigating against that includes specifically IoT devices. And same if you're issuing a legal hold, you might want to call out IoT devices in that legal hold. Because I think at some point we'll start seeing spoliation arguments about this, right? Where parties are saying, hey, IoT devices and their data are now mainstream enough that you, litigant, should have considered them and preserved them and you didn't. And now we're going to ask for sanctions.
You know, I think that this subject matter, along with several other that we've been talking about lately, really begs the market for a great timeline tool. And
oh, yes.
Of course, I have a software company that's near and dear to my heart that I know that those thoughts are there and on the roadmap. But it really does beg the need for, we need a way to not only search our data for that metadata and those search terms and date fields and whatever, but we also need to be able to document in a meaningful way that's available to all the parties involved with that investigation or that litigation, who can all put together the pieces, because that's what we're all trying to solve.
Yes.
It's not just please. Yeah. But anyway, I think that that will be coming soon to a theater near us.
Oh, gosh, I hope so. I remember being like a baby law firm associate and being asked to put together a timeline and having to create some sort of Excel spreadsheet with date description and like Bates numbers of the documents. Oh, yep. My God. And it was terrible. It was the worst. Okay, folks, I think that brings us to the end of our show here. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a 5-star review and tell your friends, family, and coworkers about us, but only the cool ones. And of course, please hit us up on LinkedIn or at admin@ediscoverychicks.com with your thoughts, questions, and drink recommendations. Until next time.
I'm not going to let you get off that easy this time, Angie. I just want to tell you that I'm so glad that you were born and I hope that you enjoy your birthday.
Oh my God. Happy birthday. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.